Good morning and welcome to Spotlight on Industry. I'm your host, Sam Mason. This month we present part two in our series on small business as we shine our spotlight on the Wool Shop in Grant City, Missouri. I had a chance to sit down with company president Alan Andrews, who assured me that the title is purely ceremonial, since both he and his brother Jeff share the load of running the family-owned company. If Alan's name is familiar to you, well, it should be. He also serves as the state representative for Missouri's 1st District, which encompasses Worth, Nottoway, Atchison, and Holt counties in the northwest corner of the state. Not only is Alan's family the owner of a successful small business, as a legislator, he also has a keen interest in seeing more small business develop in his home district. We'll hear his thoughts on the matter and learn about the Wool Shop as we shine the spotlight on industry. Stick around.
Support for Spotlight on Industry on KXCV KRNW comes from Nottoway County Economic Development. Coordinating economic development services for the City of Maryville, Nottoway County, and the Maryville Industrial Development Corporation. Their services include finance and incentives development, site location, industrial development, and small business assistance. More at maryvillemo.org. And from Mazingo Lake Recreation Park. The park provides Nottoway County residents and visitors with an 18-hole golf course, driving range, and a 9-hole junior course coming 2015. More on Mazingo's golf offerings is at mazingolake.com. Support also comes from the City of Maryville, Missouri, offering residents and visitors opportunities in education, employment, healthcare, and recreation, as well as agricultural, industrial, retail, and professional services. More information about the City of Maryville is at www.maryville.org. Support for KAXCV KRNW comes from SSM Health Medical Group, offering patients 10 locations and access to 46 primary care providers and specialists associated with St. Francis Hospital in Maryville. More information is available at ssmhealthstfrancis.com/locations.
Welcome back to Spotlight on Industry. If you're just joining us this morning, we're continuing our three-part series on small business and the important role it plays in the economy of the small communities throughout the region. My guest is Missouri 1st District Representative Alan Andrews, who is also the president of the Wool Shop in Grant City, Missouri. Last month, we spoke with Ron Houston from the J.L. Houston Company in Hopkins, Missouri. His company was started by his father in 1954 and has seen significant growth in both revenues and employees during its 61 years. If you missed that program, you can go back and listen to it on our website at kxcv.org/programs. Like the J.L. Houston Company, the Wool Shop also started from humble beginnings, and we'll hear more about that in just a few minutes. If you're not familiar with their products, I invite you to visit their website at woolshop.com. In my interview, Alan shares his passion for the family's small business and encourages others with an entrepreneurial spirit to take the leap of faith and follow their own passion. You never know where it will lead. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Sam.
As most of our listeners know, Alan, you are serving as a representative in Missouri's 1st District. And when I first approached you a few weeks ago about having you as a guest on the program, our conversation naturally went to a discussion about small business. And so before we talk about the Wool Shop, I wanted to continue that chat that we were having. So as a member of Congress, why is small business important to, I guess, not only Northwest Missouri, but also parts of Iowa, Kansas, and Nebraska?
Well, that's a good question. And, you know, through this interview process, I'll probably be wearing both hats, legislative and as a business owner. But, you know, small business is just vital. It's imperative to just the sustainability of a community, of a region, of a state, and of our country. I mean, small business is the backbone of our country, and the way that we've been able to do what we've been able to accomplish in such a short amount of time in this country is through those innovative entrepreneurial efforts through small business.
You know, it's interesting where small business comes from. Sometimes it's just the simplest of ideas, and I think that's certainly true of your products here at the Wool Shop. And we'll talk more about that and how your mom was inspired to start this business 32 years ago. But what happens at the state level in Congress to foster the growth of small business in the state of Missouri in particular?
Well, there are a lot of efforts, and being a new legislator, it's been a lot to try to understand and to learn, how to navigate through all those legislative waters, you might say, to be able to see what the state is actually doing to help the growth of small business. And we have a lot of opportunities as far as, that are given to us through the economic development model, and a lot of different initiatives at the state that the state tries to open up and to expose people to for the opportunities of starting small business. So it's a collaborative effort of many organizations and many departments to try to foster small business development.
You know, most of the businesses that are started in the United States are small businesses. That was one mm-hmm. of the things we learned from my chat with Dr. Ben Blackford last month, is that small business comes in so many shapes and sizes that even the person who is starting a franchise is often part of a much, much larger organization. So is there any, I guess, words of advice as a small business owner that you would have for people who are wanting to take that leap, maybe stop working for someone else and start up their own business?
Yeah, that's exciting. I have a passion for small business, of course, and that's all I've done. And it's exciting and it's rewarding, and it gives you the ability to do so many things whenever you're self-employed, whenever you have a business of your own. There are so many opportunities in our region, and that's one of the things that I wish that we can convey to people, just an average person, just like us. The way we started our business, there was nothing special about us. We just, the way our business began was very modest, and just continued to grow, little by little. But we have so much opportunity in our region. And whenever I look at things now, I really look at things as my district that I'm accountable for, Nottoway, Atchison, Holt, and Worth counties. And going through all of our small communities throughout my district, I just see opportunity after opportunity, and I think that's what we've got to do, is start conveying this this attitude among our people that it can be done. We can breathe new life into our communities again. It may not look exactly like it used to 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, but we've got to get to a point where we are sustaining our communities again, trying to keep the population drain and along with the wealth drain out of our region. We need to keep that here and intact. And the only way that you're successfully going to be able to do that is through small business. It used to be a theory in economic development several years ago. It called it smokestack chasing. The idea was to go and get big business and have it located here in your district or in your area. And what they have found is that, even though that's imperative, that's vitally important, especially whenever we have a building in Maryville, the old Energizer plant, we definitely need to try to get somebody in there. But we also can't discount the fact that, there's so much opportunity in our homes to be able to start businesses. And that's where I really can get excited, because I've seen firsthand a business that has started in our home and how it's been able to grow and expand and then to turn around and be a blessing on to other people and to a community. And so there's a lot of opportunities, there's a lot of challenges, but it's exciting to see what can happen through small business.
Based on those thoughts, a good opportunity that is going to hopefully be coming to Maryville soon, and this will be a little bit of news to you, is that there is a strong initiative right now to really organize our farmers market in Maryville, to turn that into an event on Saturdays. So if there's a person in Maryville who is struggling, having a hard time making ends meet, maybe they're a person, maybe they make jewelry, maybe they make furniture, maybe they make the most killer brownies in the world, this might be an opportunity coming up in the spring for those individuals to set up a booth at the farmers market,
absolutely,
make a little money, put some money in their pocket, and just see where that micro business goes. So that's just something that we're doing in the city of Maryville to connect the outside world and all of Nottoway County and all of Northwest Missouri with an event to help foster growth in the city of Maryville.
Right, and that's exactly what we need to be doing. You know, I commend them on their efforts to do that, and would highly encourage people out there that are listening to the show that, you know, if you have a desire to be involved in something like that, just give it a try. I mean, you don't have to have a lot of money to be able to start a small business. You know, a good friend of our family, Bob and Betty Bush, they've been vital to so many people in Northwest Missouri and how they've been able to contribute. But I remember several years ago, probably 15 years ago, I was talking to Bob about our community in Grant City as we continue to see things decline and deteriorate in the community. I told Bob, I said, you know, what we need someone, we need a big business out there to come and make some make an investment in Grant City. He said, you know, I don't want to make you feel bad, but I always remember him saying, the way that your community is going to grow again is through internal growth. It's going to have to be people from within the community, not outside of the community, moving in and building businesses. It's got to be that grassroots growth from within the community, people who are willing to and have a desire to say, you know, I want to start that business in my kitchen, or I want to come up with that product and see what I can do with it. And that's where we can turn back this trajectory that we're experiencing in our small communities. Every small community in Northwest Missouri has the potential to be able to change that and to turn that trajectory back and to start growing again little by little from within. And that's where we need to challenge people. I don't think we need to just encourage people. I think we truly need to, it needs almost to be a call or a passion in it.
And when we look historically at some of these towns, or really I guess you could say all the towns in Northwest Missouri, little small towns like Grant City, like Parnell, like Elmo, like Claremont, like Hopkins, these were all once thriving little communities, and they weren't thriving because there was big business and big industry in those towns. There were people in town that lived there that had need. There were business people who were willing to fulfill that need. And it's a two-way street. If a person in Grant City is going to become an entrepreneur and start their own business, then the people of Grant City need to make sure they're patronizing that business and not taking their business elsewhere to other big box retailers, for example. Bring those dollars, keep them in the community, and it will help those businesses grow, help the community grow.
Exactly. And you know, you refer to big box, and that's what we have experienced in our business, as well as I think business across the board has experienced the change in in the retail environment. You go back 32 years ago, you can even go back 20 years ago, and you can see how our business really began to change. It used to be where every small town in every state across this country had a small retail establishment, several. You know, there's a lot of our communities that had two hardware stores and had a drug store and three grocery stores. You know, you hear all these stories, and now maybe they don't have any, or maybe they just have one. That's what we have seen, experience in our business. We probably have the same amount of customers. We would probably sell to roughly 2,000 customers, coast to coast and internationally. But we have seen a change in who that customer is. Used to be 80% of our customer base were small customers. You know, those small what we consider mom and pop stores in all these small communities. And now it's since big box has come in, you've got the big box retailers that have come in and really driven a lot of the small independent retailers out of the market. And so because of that, now primarily 80% of our business is in the hands of, I would say, roughly 20% of our customers. And so that's not a good mix that we like to see, you know, but it's been nothing that we could really control. It would be great to see a resurgence of small independent retailers, and I think that's why it is vitally imperative that the small independent retailers in our communities, we need to support them as much as we can.
Stephen Covey would call it a paradigm shift of shopping and consumerism in this country, that when you see that there is a new retail store that opens up in your community and perhaps they sell the same product that the big box store does, are they going to sell it as cheaply? No, they can't compete with what the big box retailer's doing. But honestly, if it's just a few dollars, isn't it worth it to support your local entrepreneur and your little guy as opposed to saving $2 or $3 on a widget, whatever the widget is?
That's right.
Why not buy the widget from the little guy and support that business as opposed to the big box? Because the big box certainly isn't going to appreciate the business as much as your next door neighbor who just started his own or her own business.
You're exactly right. It's great dealing with small independent retailers because there's a big difference. I see this in the legislature as well, that there's a big difference whenever you're spending your own money. And the small independent retailers, I mean, they take that buying decision a whole lot different. They look at things differently. There's more of a commitment and more willing to learn about the product that they're going to be selling because they offer a whole different level of service. We love all of our businesses, of course, all of our customers, but we sure enjoy working with our small independent retailers because, I mean, that's who we are. We're small people, and it's good to work with people who spend their own money.
Well, let's talk about the wool shop. So tell me the story of how your mother started this business.
It goes back to 1982, whenever I was a freshman in high school. I needed an FFA project, and I chose sheep as my project. And I bought 6 head of registered Dorset ewes to get that project started and learned about sheep feeding and the breeding aspects and showing. I really got into showing the sheep as well. And our family, we work together whenever, you know, somebody has an interest in something. The family kind of comes around and expresses an interest in it. And so my folks, my brother was he was off to college at that time. And my folks and I, we were at a sheep association meeting up in Southwest Iowa, up in Mount Air. And one night at a meeting, my mother saw a lamb's wool duster that a little old couple from northern Iowa had made, and she told my dad, she said, you know, I would like to do that. She's had always been a stay-at-home mom, and one thing led to the other. They found out where to buy sheepskins, mm-hmm. and where to buy some dowels, and they took $500 out of their bank account, and they started the wool shop. And it's just really quite an interesting story of how it literally started in the basement of our home. And my mother learned how to make wool dusters, and she made dusters and had a little stockpile of them and went to a craft show down in St. Joe. I believe it was called the Ruby Doo Festival or something like that down in St. Joe. Went down and literally sold out everything that she had made. And so she came back that night, spent all night long working, making more dusters for the next day. So she knew that there could potentially be a market for that. And so she enjoyed doing it. She thought it would be a way that she could help kind of contribute to the family finances. And so one thing led to the other. Again, like I said, she's a stay-at-home mom, so she wanted to be there for all of my athletic events and school events and things that happen typically on Friday night and a lot of the weekends, and she didn't want to be away from the family, so she decided that she wanted to try to sell on a wholesale level. So she went to a gift show, to a trade show out in Los Angeles, and brought a little table and a very crude little setup, you know, but had no idea what to even do at that point. And so she went out and she met a lot of stores out there that were interested in the product and hired on a sales rep and came back from California with a handful of orders and a rep who actually is still with us today.
Oh,
he's
wow.
Well into his 80s, and that was the beginning of how our business started. And little by little, it grew and got to a point where there was too much business for her to handle, and so hired the neighbor lady and another neighbor lady, and it, you know, just kind of eventually grew and grew. After I graduated from high school, I went to Northwest and received a dual degree in marketing and business management. And at that point, I was kind of at a crossroads. You know, do I go back home to the family business, or do I go to the city and pursue a corporate job? And I just felt, you know, just really kind of a pull back to, you know, let's see what I can do, you know, in my career, establishing it with the family business. And so that's what I did. I went back into the family business, I had a passion for it. I'd grown up with it, and the business began to grow a little bit more than it had before. And we were able to pursue some of the larger accounts. We were working, we got into Williams-Sonoma, Bed Bath & Beyond. We at that time we were doing a lot of business with Amway, doing a lot of a lot of larger scale business.
Did you have competition when your mother first started this up? I mean, I know you said that she kind of got the idea from the couple up in Iowa. Was that something that they had come up with on their own, or why do you think it just took off the way it did? I mean, were there other companies making wool dusters that you had to compete with?
There were. First of all, why it took off the way it did, you have to meet my mother.
Okay.
I mean, she's just a phenomenal lady. And I mean, she would, it's not even a sales tactic, you know, because it's just, she's honest and genuine. Mm-hmm. You know, people talk a lot about relationship selling, and it is vitally imperative, but you know, people can see through that. They can see through if you're genuine or not. And truly, she's more interested, she always has been more interested in learning about you, and you know, let's talk about your family, you know. And I've been there was a company several years ago that we worked with. It was a company called Lectors, and they were a kitchenware store, and they were based out in New Jersey, and I think they had over 1,000 stores. And I was wanting to pitch them on dusters, and so I wanted my mother to come along, and you know, we're going to team up and try to get this account. And it was interesting because, you know, in this meeting, we're in this, you know, this big corporate office in New Jersey. She starts talking to the buyer about family and about, you know, tell me about your wife and your kids. And she had brought along some pictures of our family, mm-hmm. and things. And it was just an interesting interaction because, you know, you know, I watched this big city buyer just kind of melt, mm-hmm. you know, just kind of come down a few notches, you might say, to just kind of to get real, and you know, one thing kind of led to the next, and we were talking about business. But so yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons we've been able to grow to the point that we have, is because it's our family has developed some real genuine ties to a lot of the people that we sell to.
In these last 32 years, your product line has expanded to more than just wool dusters. That's the core, I guess, of what you do. But what are some of the other products that you offer?
You're right. I mean, it's I would say 95% of everything that we sell is that mainstay product. It's the lamb's wool duster. And we've also expanded to floor mops. As more carpets were being taken up and hardwood floors put down, we saw this trend for being able to use lamb's wool. What we try to do is just kind of see what the trends are and kind of listen. You know, we try to listen to our customer and see what the needs are.
And what is it about lamb's wool that makes it the perfect material for dusting your home?
Lamb's wool, it's just a natural fiber. It has a natural ability to pick up and hold the dust. And if you were to look at a wool fiber, a filament, under a microscope, you would see that each individual wool fiber has a lot of rough pockets, you might say. And what happens is that works together to trap and hold the dust particles. And that's why it doesn't spread the dust around. That's why people like it so well. So a lot of the man-made, a lot of the man-made fibers is a smooth fiber. If you look at that under a microscope, it's smooth instead of rough. And even though wool feels very soft to the touch, if you look at it and really break it down, it's a rougher fiber as far as its ability to pick up dust. And that's why. Also, there's traces of lanolin that's left in the wool that a lot of people feel that has gives the ability to do that as well.
You mentioned your customers a few times. Who are your customers? Because I know you had said earlier that you don't have a lot of customers within this particular region, but more so on the coasts. So who are the customers that you sell to, and where could a person outside of an online environment, where could they find your products?
Right. And it is kind of interesting that, a lot of our customer base is not in the Midwest, because it's not really where the populace is. I mean, it's most of our product is found on the East Coast, the West Coast. We're doing more internationally than we've ever done before. I guess we're probably at maybe 10% now. We used to be 1% internationally. Now we're probably up to 10%, maybe even a little more internationally. But most of our business is found where there's more population. And so we sell, to a lot of the big box stores. Our biggest customer is Home Depot. We don't have the entire chain, but we have about four or 500 stores down in the southeast region of the country. We sell a lot to the TJX companies, which is, there's a lot of offshoots of TJX, which is, they have TJ Maxx up in Canada. They have Winners and HomeSense. Here in the States, there's also Home Goods. They also have these stores over in Europe. And so they would be our second biggest customer. We sell to, really just across the board, we sell to a lot of independent vacuum cleaner stores. We sell to hardware stores, gift shops, just a broad variety of housewares-oriented retailers.
And do you sell everything under the Wool Shop brand? Once it goes into a Home Depot, is it branded from the Wool Shop, or do you manufacture for another company that might put their name on it?
We do a little bit of private label manufacturing, but primarily it's under the Wool Shop brand. We do, we're always open if there's a retailer that wants, wants their label or their brand on it. We work those out with them. There's been several instances where if we were shipping into another country where the tag had to be produced in French or something like that, a lot of different variations. We're open and flexible to try to work with all types of customers.
Okay. So, Alan, as we kind of begin to wrap things up, I'm curious, in the beginning of this business, was your mother able to use any of the wool from those 6 sheep that you were raising as an FFA project?
That's a good question. The those 6 quickly grew into, many more. And we had, before we sold our sheep, we got so busy with things. I knew I was going to be running the campaign and things. And so we ended up actually selling our sheep. We used to run about 100 head of ewes in our breeding flock. But the those 6, did they spin off any wool that we used? We did. We used, there was one product that was actually a plant duster that had a lot of lanolin in it and would shine a plant's leaves. We sold those to a lot of florists and plant retailers, greenhouses and things like that. But primarily our wool comes, all of our wool is primarily from Australian Merino breed of sheep, which is a real fine wool breed. In the beginning, we used American sheepskins in the first couple of years that we just got started. But we really began quickly to find that we weren't unable to get the quality of the finished product using American skins as we did whenever we experimented using Australian sheepskins. And the reason is that, you know, I think the average flock size here in the United States is about 35, 40 head of sheep. Where over in Australia, you might have, it's nothing uncommon to have a flock size of, you know, 2,000 or 3,000, clear up to, you know, 10, 20,000 sheep. So what you have essentially is a more consistent quality of product. That wool has had the very same environmental attributes that have gone into it. The wool is, it's important for us to have a good quality product, to have density of the fibers, and to have a good consistent wool length. So those two things we have been able to find that, you know, we've gone to Australia to be able to use the Australian Merino, which is a fine wool breed, and of course Australia is the world's capital of sheep production, so that's where we have always after the first 2 years, you always use the Australian Merino.
A little while back, we were talking about your competition when you first got started, and then we kind of got sidetracked from that. So just to circle back, where are they now?
There used to be four of us that produced wool dusters on what I would consider our level of production. And two of those were in the state of Washington, and one was in the state of Texas. Right now, we're the last one out of four that are still remaining. And I really contribute that to really to where we're located. You know, we're located in an area where it's typically cheaper to manufacture, less costly to manufacture. If you look at our facilities, we try to operate very modestly, very efficiently. And so because of that, you know, I think that it's been able to give us a competitive advantage to be able to keep our costs down and be able to charge our customer, you know, an affordable cost where they're able to turn around and mark that up and get their markup out of it, and not to be so overinflated that the consumer is burdened with the cost of a high dollar product.
So as we get ready to wrap things up here and we go on our tour, what are your final thoughts on, I guess, two things? One, the wool shop. What was the thing that you would like for people to know about your business? And then secondly, any final thoughts on small business in general?
Well, I would want people to know that if you look at us, there is nothing special about us that cannot be duplicated in one form of business or the other. In order to start a business, you've got to have a desire, you've got to have a passion for the product that you're getting behind. You have to sell yourself first, you know, make sure that you put out a quality product. And the other thing is, you have to be willing to do whatever it takes. Spend however many hours it takes, do whatever it takes in order to get that business off the ground and get it going. You don't have to be a wealthy individual in order to start a business. That's what I would want people to look at our business and say, and maybe it be inspiring to them to say, you know, if they can do that, I can do it. Mm-hmm. You know, I can come up with my own business and I can do something as well.
Alan, thank you very much. I appreciate your time this morning, and I'll look forward to going on the tour of your plant.
Thank you.
Small businesses come in many shapes and sizes. Looking back, a business the size of the J.L. Houston Company, for instance, is considered a small business even though their products have a high price point and their revenues are high. With only 10 employees, the wool shop is also a small business with higher volumes and lower price points. Both companies are still family-owned and operated and have withstood the test of time. Both companies also attribute their success to the fact that they adhere to their Midwestern values and a friendly, down-home way of doing business that their customers on the coasts and around the world appreciate. As a state legislator, Alan has a keen interest in encouraging people to take the leap and start their own small business, even if it's just out of their basement, garage, or dining room. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll take a tour of their facility.
Support for Spotlight on Industry on KXCV KRNW comes from Nottoway County Economic Development, coordinating economic development services for the City of Maryville, Nottoway County, and the Maryville Industrial Development Corporation. Their services include finance and incentives development, site location, industrial development, and small business assistance. More at MarylvilleMO.org. And from Mazinga Lake Recreation Park, the park offers residents and visitors camping facilities for tents and RVs, as well as lakeside cabin rentals. Mazinga Lake also offers boating, fishing, hiking, and equestrian trails. More information about Mazinga is at MazingaLake.com. Support also comes from the City of Maryville, Missouri, offering residents and visitors opportunities in education, employment, healthcare, and recreation, as well as agricultural, industrial, retail, and professional services. More information about the City of Maryville is at www.maryville.org. Support for KAXCV KRNW comes from SSM Health Medical Group, offering patients 10 locations and access to 46 primary care providers and specialists associated with St. Francis Hospital in Maryville. More information is available at ssmhealthstfrancis.com/locations.
Welcome back to Spotlight on Industry. We've been visiting with Alan Andrews from The Wool Shop in Grant City, Missouri. The Wool Shop makes lamb's wool dusters and provides other cleaning products for the home. If you don't have one of their dusters at home, you've surely seen them in stores. It's a simple product that consists of a long, hardwood handle with a fuzzy lamb's wool tip. Why do they use lamb's wool? Well, wool is a natural fiber that is extremely durable and complex. The cuticle layer of each fiber is composed of hundreds, if not thousands, of microscopic, overlapping scales with tiny pockets in between that trap and hold dust particles. The cuticle layer has a thin protective film covering it called the epicuticle that makes the fibers scratch resistant, so they can be used on those more delicate surfaces of your home, such as the dining room table or your grandmother's hutch. Some dusters come with a telescoping handle that stretches high as 25 feet to get the cobwebs out of your vaulted ceilings. And let's not forget your floors. They also make a line of floor mops to remove dust from those too. One of the great things about visiting their offices and facility is its location. They're situated about 5 miles north of Grant City in Worth County, Missouri, on a county highway. The Iowa state line is less than 2 miles to the north, and there is nothing but rolling hills and farmland as far as the eye can see. The manufacturing facility is housed in a couple of steel buildings behind the family's home, and the property around both are covered in mature trees. At one time, the family also ran about 100 head of sheep, but they decided to give it up when Alan entered the legislature. He works side by side with his older brother, Jeff, who oversees the manufacturing and shipping. As I mentioned earlier, Alan holds the title of president, but it's purely ceremonial. The two brothers share the load of running and growing the family business. Alan took us inside to see how the dusters are made.
The whole process begins with the sheepskin. It's important to make sure that we have a high quality sheepskin to get started with. So what we see here is a merino cross sheepskin that we bring in from Australia, or it's an Australian skin. You can see that everything is already tanned. It's chrome tanned to allow the duster to be washable. Everything comes in a complete sheepskin. Then we go ahead and take it, cut it up into product. This is our sheepskin room. We bring sheepskins in. We sort them out by wool length to determine what size duster they're going to be made into. This one, this is an 18-inch, 24-inch, 48-inch. Our telescopic dusters require a little bit more wool length. This is where really the main process begins. With having a good quality sheepskin.
Now this has a little color to it. That's obviously not the color that the sheep was when it was out in the field. So your manufacturer puts a little dye on that?
We do. We have them tip dye it to enhance the sheepskin. Also, whenever you feel that wool, it doesn't feel like it's, there's not the curl in the wool like you would feel if it's from a live sheep. So the sheepskins actually, they go through an electrification and a heat treatment process. And what that does, the electrification will straighten out the curl in the wool and will allow it to be, more full, more density of the fibers that makes into a good product.
Is this an undercoat for the sheep?
If you were just to wash this sheepskin, if it were not dyed or bleached in any way, it would just be kind of like a dirty off-white color. So this is the actual wool. This is the leather side. Over the years, we found that the base color is kind of a whiter base. It's been bleached, and then we go through with the darker brown tip dye to be able to enhance the aesthetic value of the duster.
And then sheep's wool always has lanolin in it, and mm-hmm. if you were to feel a live sheep and you get your fingers right down into it, you'll come out and you'll feel that.
Exactly.
I don't feel that within this.
No, a lot of the most all of the lanolin has been extracted from the wool. So, there's not, if anything, there's just mild traces of lanolin, but primarily it's all been taken out.
And I would think that if you had a sheepskin that was full of lanolin, it might get gummed up and be hard to use as a duster.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. The next part of the process that's really important is making sure that we utilize every square inch of the sheepskin as we can, because the sheepskin is our most the highest cost of any of the steps in our production, as far as our raw material costs. So what we do is we lay out a pattern through a die that we've made to be able to put the ink down on the sheepskin to be able to cut it into 1.5 inch widths, and then we will literally take a razor blade, as you see here, and individually cut those strips out. And so what we do is we try to, you can see a sheepskin here that has been skirted out. So we like in the flank area where it's not really good wool, mm-hmm. we will go ahead and cut that out, but we hand draw onto the sheepskin, so we're able to utilize as much of the square inches as we can, so we have less waste. So what you see over here is, this is the waste of the cutting process, and you end up with a lot of little small pieces of sheepskin, and we go through actually have a tremendous amount of waste, if believe it or not. But even though we try to utilize it, every square inch, sometimes we just simply can't. So what we do with our sheepskin scraps is we give it away for insulation. All of the buildings here that you see have been insulated, not only with the rolled insulation, but also with wool.
Okay.
And put it down into the walls. It makes a tremendous insulant. They use it in Australia a lot for insulation. So anybody out there that needs some wool insulation, they know where to come. So.
Now, you said that you give it away. Is this a product that you could be selling?
You know, we probably could, but we found that it does people some good. If you have an attic that needs insulated, or a garage or something like that, we're able to do that. We're able to give wool away to in this amount, so they're able to be a blessing to other people too. So,
and I can imagine that the insulating properties are just amazing with wool.
They found that it is the equivalent of 8 inches of brick. If you to be able to drop this down into a wall, it does have a lot of good insulating value.
If you have a hard time getting rid of some of this, what ends up happening to it? I mean, you can't keep all of it.
We have always been successful in getting rid of it. There's a lot of just north of us, there's a rather large Amish community. A lot of the Amish schoolhouses and things have used our wool to be able to insulate, and as well as in their homes. Just a lot of just people just needing, it seems like everybody has a need or a building or something to insulate. Throw a little bit more wool in the attic or something to cut down on the heating costs. But we've always been able to get rid of everything. It doesn't burn very well, so it's not like you can burn it or anything, So we just bag it up and wait until we get enough to be able to give it to somebody. So.
And it's resistant to pests and vermin.
Primarily. So it's worked really well for us in our buildings, and it's pretty good. So.
That's interesting. I never would have thought to use sheep's wool for insulation.
You bet. Absolutely. And what you see here is just different groupings of different sizes that we cut them down to, like I was saying before, 24-inch, there, 10-inch, all the different sizes. We'll go ahead and group those together, and then we'll bring them over here to go ahead and start the wrapping process.
I'm seeing the dowels that you use. I presume those all come cut to length?
They do, yeah. All the dowels are brought in. We used to do a lot of work with dowels up in Maine. A lot of the dowel companies have gone out of business over the years. We still do do a lot of our dowels, bring them in domestically. But some of them also come from, some of them are Baltic birch that we bring in also. What happens at this point, the glue is put onto the dowel, and then the wool, since it's already cut into a strip, then it's wrapped, literally just wrapped around that half-inch dowel and to make into a duster. Depending on the size, this is a 24-inch size, so we'll have a wool mark of 12 inches. Gets down to that point, then we cut it off and then go to the next process. So we use a special waterproof adhesive to be able to adhere the lamb's wool to the dowel, and that way there's... we also use some a method of stapling. So on some of the dusters, we will go ahead and staple. What Danielle is doing is she is going ahead and finishing the duster by carding the wool, and so that's a way just to fluff it up as much as possible. You know, to get all the kinks and curls out of the wool and make it nice to be able to display at retail. So we go ahead and put a leather hang strap and a tie onto the duster, and then it's brought up into our shipping department and ready to go.
As I went through the plant with Alan, one of the things that I noticed was that each step of the process was done by hand. I asked him if they had ever investigated ways to automate the process.
You know, we have looked at different ways. It's a tricky product to automate. We've looked at different ways. We've tried to increase our production efficiencies, of course, but it is it's a challenge to be able to figure out a way to actually wrap that wool onto a dowel. Mm-hmm. So it almost requires a manual operation to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there's always something to be said for truly handmade products. I mean, every day
That's
we
right.
see things that are manufactured using machinery and automation, but it is actually nice to see something that's truly made by hand.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
The company makes much more than just lamb's wool dusters. Their other products include slippers, dog toys, seatbelt strap covers, and more. So we left the duster assembly and shipping departments and moved out to an area with a large punch press. It was being operated by Roberta, a longtime employee of the company.
You've got to know that Roberta has worked here for 30 years.
Almost
31 in January. And
congratulations.
She, we'd be lost without her. We couldn't have done what we've done without Roberta. And she takes care of all of our sewing. I'll show you here in a little bit all of our making slippers and earmuffs and seatbelt strap covers, everything like that. What she's doing now is cutting the tops on our die cut machine, cutting the tops of our wedge mops.
As we left Roberta to her task of punching out parts for their wedge mops, we moved upstairs to the sewing room, where they assemble the slippers, earmuffs, pet toys, and other items. As we wrapped up our tour, I mentioned to Alan that it was amazing how a product as simple as his mother's original duster had grown into a full line of products. See, it's interesting how your mother's original product of just creating a lamb's wool duster has evolved into a full line of dog toys, slippers, dust mops, dusters of different sizes, dusters that telescope. It's taken on a life of its own over the last 32 years.
It has. We've started out with that one duster, and I think now we have a little over 50 items in the line, and always, you know, always waiting, always ready for that next new product to come out. With our ceiling fan duster is our latest example of hearing people saying, you know, they get tired of chasing that fan blade around. So is there any way that we can hold that blade in place? So we came up with several different prototypes of a way to be able to do that. And we've come out with a ceiling fan duster that we're currently working on the patent of now, but it will clean the top and the bottom blade at the same time. We did a pretty successful rollout to several of the Home Depot stores down in the southern states, and where they have a lot of ceiling fans, and so it met with a lot of good feedback that we heard from them as well as other consumers. And so, you know, we're always looking at new products that we can develop, new ways that we can diversify. And I think that's really a key today, is to always be open and willing to diversify into new areas, just to kind of help strengthen the base, you know. So that's what we're always doing.
Well, Alan, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us today and for showing me around your shop.
It's our privilege to have you here. We thank you for taking the time to be here.
I'm sure that when Alan's mother made her prototype of the lamb's wool duster in 1983, she never dreamed that simple idea would grow into a business that is still going strong 32 years later. She was simply a stay-at-home mom with a little time on her hands who wanted to contribute to the family's financial picture. Maybe you're in the same situation. Maybe you've got a great idea that could be the next big thing. There are resources right here in Northwest Missouri that can answer your questions and help you get started. Northwest Missouri Enterprise Facilitation is a great place to start. You can learn more online at nwmef.com. That's nwmef.com. Or by calling 816-262-9400 and speaking to the group's facilitator, Kelly Morris. Who knows? Maybe you've got the next million-dollar idea. I'd like to thank my guest this month, Alan Andrews from The Wool Shop in Grant City, Missouri. Join us next month as we wrap up our three-part series on small business as we travel to Chillicothe, Missouri, where we'll visit with Bill and Tammy George from Crooked Hill Beekeeping. We'll learn how this husband and wife team developed a hobby into a business. They've put a new spin on the beekeeping business by selling much more than raw honey and wax. If you've ever toyed with the idea of keeping bees on your own, you'll want to be sure to tune in. Once again, Karen and I would like to thank you for tuning in this year as we've explored the many facets of industry in our region. We look forward to bringing you more stories in 2016. Until then, happy holidays from all of us at KXCV and KRNW.
Support for Spotlight on Industry comes from Nottoway County Economic Development, Mazingo Lake Recreation Park, and the City of Maryville. More information on all of our sponsors is available at MarylandMo.org. Spotlight on Industry is a production of KXCV-KRNW and Northwest Missouri State University. Our editor and producer is Karen Lawrence. For more information about how your company can be featured on Spotlight on Industry, please contact Sam Mason at 660-562-1163.